Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Thanks for staying with us on Point of View. It's just gone 18 minutes past 9 here on Kaya959 on the street, on the air. We want to hear your point of view. You can WhatsApp us 063-688-0959 with any questions or comments on what's taken place on the show so far. So a little bit earlier on, we're speaking to the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Dr. Mbongiseni Buthelezi, and he was speaking about conflict and how the foundation is looking at that through dialogue. Let's go now to Sudan, where there's apparently been a resurgence of fighting in North Darfur's capital. I'm joined by Mohammed Osman. He's a researcher at Human Rights Watch. Mohammed, thank you so much for your time on Kaya959 this evening. Just give us context into the conflict in Sudan before we move into Al-Fashir.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for having me here again. I mean, I think it's indeed a conflict. I mean, just listening to the previous speaker talking about kind of the forgotten conflict in the continent or elsewhere, we are definitely not looking at a situation that is getting better. We're looking at a situation that is getting worse and it's been forgotten by the continent, but also by the international community. One of the things that we're seeing very specifically to trigger the violence as well, I mean, it's the flow of weapons, particularly drones, that has been actively being used. Sudan remain to be the largest humanitarian crisis in the world. And at the same time, both of the warring parties have been hindering access of aid by the international community. We have not been seeing the action of the international community to engage with the situation. I'm sure we're going to talk about North Darfur, but it's overall, even in areas when the conflict ceased to exist, the impact of the conflict remains there. I mean, particularly when we talk about food security, when we talk about infrastructures, we talk about services, people coming back to places that being described by many people are being ghost towns, so, and trying to find their houses and trying to rebuild their lives. It's a situation that no one can see, as they say, the light at the end of the tunnel with what's happening.
Mohammed, if you had to describe, and I know this is quite difficult, but if you had to give somebody a one or two line sentence on why there is this conflict in Sudan, what would you say?
It's a conflict about power. It's a conflict about power enabled by foreign actors, including regional actors in the continent, including actors outside of the continent. It's a conflict that is being both parties being emboldened by decades and decades of impunity. It's a conflict that reminds us that if you're not addressing accountability, we cannot have a sustainable peace. It's a conflict that ethnicity being used as a card to refuel violence in certain parts. It's a conflict that for many people remember the conflict between, you know, South and North Sudan by now, and Darfur being the site of genocide has been described by many actors. So it's a situation which is like, it's historical. It's not something happened now. It's been happening for years, but it's really a conflict about powers. It's a conflict about regional dynamics that has been absolutely contributing to the acceleration of the suffering of the population in Sudan.
Okay. And to what end?
I mean, this is the thing, right? There's no end. I mean, many people will ask the same question about, like, what's the end of this conflict? You know, what's the objective of this conflict? We can't really see this. What we're seeing now is that one side is controlling some parts of the territory, the other side controlling, other parts of the territory, particularly Darfur. The rebel civil forces who have been responsible of atrocities in Darfur decades ago, now also responsible of the same atrocities and controlling that region. It's really about power. It's really about contributing. I mean, looking into how these different parties are connected to regional actors, as I said, extraction, minerals, money. That is really, for what we're seeing now, is the objective.
Mm-hmm.
But no one can see down the line what could be the main objective down, like, you know, at the end of the day.
You've spoken a little bit about the impact. I know that the healthcare and the health services is really a challenge when it comes to the aftermath of the conflict. There are also ghost towns, as you've spoken about, a loss of life and sexual violence as some of the things that are taking place there. What are you seeing?
I mean, we're seeing many things. I mean, for example, let's just talk about, this is a country with this conflict and the toll that have on him on civilians,
mm-hmm.
where there's no humanitarian aid coming in. The UN is not scaling up its access to Sudan, where international actors are failing to address the level and the scale of the crisis as well. We're seeing the local volunteers, young men and women, being targeted, detained, killed. We are seeing the Sudanese armed forces, one part of the conflict, actively building and establishing a system of detaining individuals who have been perceived to be against them. The same thing with the rapid support forces. We are seeing the scale of the sexual violence in a way that probably the continent didn't even witness, while at the same time there are no infrastructures to provide services to those survivors of sexual violence, as you just mentioned. We are looking at a situation where in North Darfur, the rapid support forces are establishing a siege that blocking aid, harassing, intimidating, and killing people who are trying to flee from there at the same time, while targeting the people who decided not to flee or still remain there. We are looking at a situation where the use of drones has been the theme of the conflict, because it's been provided by regional and international actors that contributing to also the targeting of the civilians at the same time. We're looking at the looting and the destruction of the markets, disruption of the food system. I mean, for anyone who would know about Sudan, Sudan is heavily an agricultural country that depends a lot on the local food system productions. And these systems have been disrupted, have been attacked. So we're talking about years and years of rehabilitating these systems.
And you've said, as Human Rights Watch, that the Sudanese government is committing crimes that you've described as ethnic cleansing.
So for us, I mean, for us, definitely when we look at the crimes being committed by the both parties, is the rapid support forces have committed crimes of ethnic cleansing. And we have been asking the International Criminal Court to look at that, including to the possibility of genocide in West Darfur. The International Criminal Court have a mandate at the moment to look at the crimes in Darfur, but not all over the country.
Mm.
We have asked for the expansion of the International Criminal Court to look at the conflict-related abuses all over the country. For the Sudanese armed forces, well, we can be described as Sudanese government. We're looking at war crimes. We have been looking at what that denial of aid access. I mean, if you talk to any of the humanitarians, right, it's more of like not getting visas, travel permits getting blocked, all of these different things happening. So, and then we're looking at the detention crimes as well, distributed violations. So definitely both sides committing crimes. And the thing, one of the things about the narrative of the conflict is not about the equalizing both parties committing the same level of crimes. However, both of them contribute. I mean, just to give the one example, maybe I said before, about sexual violence. Most of the crimes of sexual violence have been committed by the rapid support forces. However, the Sudanese armed forces, by blocking aid access, they contributed to the double victimizations of the survivors of sexual violence, because they cannot get access to aid that they necessarily and arrogantly need.
Earlier you spoke about how there is a perception or feeling that the world has forgotten Sudan and the international community is not making as much noise or providing assistance. What would the ideal scenario be where that changes?
I mean, I think it's important. I mean, he's thinking about, again, right, listening to the previous speaker and talking about Gaza, for example. I think it's looking at the continent, right, looking at the, I think it has been shocking for the Sudanese people is the absence of the African Union, of the African countries, with the engagement of the situation on Sudan. I think the lessons learned is that you cannot reach sustainable peace without accountability. And this should be the first start. I mean, just looking, you know, a few weeks ago, we had the renewal of the UN fact-finding mission on Sudan. And the only African country that voted yes for it was South Africa. And that's very telling about how even the continent forgot about Sudan. So we cannot even go beyond and blame, you know, the international and Western communities about forgetting about Sudan. Everyone have interests about what the conflict is happening now. I think it's just a reminder that we would need to see the continent jumping into action to remind people what's happening in the conflict. And again, make sure that accountability and justice should be the priority when it comes to engaging on the situation in Sudan.
Mohammed, what's the worst case scenario if this conflict continues relatively unchecked, both for the people in Sudan and those abuses and crimes that you've spoken about, and for the region as well?
It's definitely a destabilizing situation. I mean, just looking at the neighboring countries of Sudan, I mean, we have been, you know, the reports about the United Arab Emirates, you know, being involved actively supporting one side of the conflict, which is the rapid support forces through Chad, South Sudan, and Ethiopia. So you already have neighboring countries being involved in the conflict, where Egypt, for example, have been actively supporting the Sudanese armed forces. So it's a destabilizing conflict to the region. And that's why it's very shocking why we are not seeing the outcry from the regional organization of the African Union to minimize at least the impact of the conflict. I mean, the numbers that we're looking at, Sudanese who cross borders into Egypt, Ethiopia, South Sudan, Uganda, Kenya, I mean, even many made their way to South Africa. It's there. It's more about like how we can get the regional and neighboring countries of Sudan and the international community to be reminded this is a conflict that if we will continue, of course, it's going to be the Libyan scenario of like two territories, but it's not going to be sustainable. It's going to be destabilizing the region. I mean, the region is about a cake in so many ways.
Okay, Mohammed Osman, researcher at Human Rights Watch, just taking us through the conflict in Sudan, the ramifications of the conflict seemingly going on unchecked, and the incredibly difficult and disturbing things that they have witnessed or are seeing in Sudan. It's time for a short break. When we come back, we're going to be taking a look at the Madlanga Commission, just a wrap of what took place from this afternoon's testimony. You are, of course, welcome to share your point of view with us. 063-688-0959 is where you'll find us here on Kaya 959.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.